The Tom Woods Show, episode 2209.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy the Tom Woods Show, it's time to go to the next level. And next level, Tom Woods, is libertyclassroom.com. This is where my friends and I teach all the stuff you did not get in your conventional education, history, economics, and more, the way it ought to be taught, with all the content they left out or distorted. Check it out at libertyclassroom.com.
Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm delighted to welcome today Dr. Pierre Corey, who is president of the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance. I'm going to link on the show notes page both to that and to his highly valuable Substack, which you can find at pierrecorey.substack.com. Corey spelled K-O-R-Y. He's been very outspoken. He's been fearless through this whole thing. And I have a bunch of questions I want to ask him. And really, he is the one person I wanted to talk to get them answered. So, Dr. Corey, welcome to the show.
Hi, good to be here.
All right. I know there are a number of people I could have talked to, but you are so well-rounded on all these things, and you seem to have such a command of the numbers and what's going on in all different sorts of places that even though I know your primary emphasis has been on ivermectin,
yes,
doggone it, you know so much about so much else that I wanted to have you on because of an interview I saw you give not too long ago where you were trying to reckon with this problem, which you would think would be getting a lot more attention than it is, namely this excess deaths problem that seems to be popping up in country after country that is, in fact, starting to get little by little bits and pieces of media attention. I mean, you would think when there are more deaths than usual, somebody would comment on that. We certainly got plenty of that during COVID. But these deaths are not COVID deaths, and there's not nearly the kind of scientific discussion we would expect about them. What kind of light can you shed on this for us?
Well, I mean, probably the first thing I would say is that it's sort of like in your question, and it's shocking that the data is screaming from so many sources and so many countries of just massive amounts of death, and it's just not talked about. But, you know, that's an extension of what I've seen in COVID, right? If it goes against the policies and therefore the narratives, it's suppressed. And I could never imagine such censorship of such important topics that is so pervasive because it's global. You know, the communication of media systems, I read one article which showed that most of all media is owned by one of six companies. And so there's this huge consolidation of media. And I don't know if they send out memos throughout those organizations or corporations, but the level of censorship is astonishing. And so on the topic you're asking me about, I mean, I don't even know where to start. You know, I would say the most shocking and one of the first kind of explosions of data was when the CEO of One America, which is, I think, a 200-year-old life insurance company with 100 million in assets or more, you know, the CEO went out in public and gave an interview saying that they have an unprecedented rise in life insurance claims from the ages of 18 to 64. So these are working age Americans. And on a year-to-year basis, they said that 10% rise in that age group is a 1 in 200-year event. And he was reporting, I can't remember, it was 32 or 38% rise in life insurance claims of young working-age people. And when you look, an investigative journalist did a follow-up on that CEO and reached out to the company. They were very forthcoming. They were very communicative. And they even provided the journalist a mortality chart from the CDC. And the CDC, you can see what the mortality was in 2019, 2020, and then in 2021, at the end of quarter one, you see this sudden rise, a steep slope of mortality amongst 18 to 64-year-olds. And all you have to ask yourself is what happened at the end of quarter one, 2021, right? So I have seen coverage of this issue, but the articles all bring up alternative explanations, right? So I'm referring to the vaccine program, right? There's nothing else that could match that historic rise. And it can't be deaths of despair, of alcoholism and drug addiction and suicide. We've had those for years. I don't know why it would suddenly rise at the end of quarter one, 2021. I've seen people try to blame it on lockdowns. lockdowns were largely over in most places, especially in the US. We weren't locking down in 2021. And so, you know, it's absurd. So that's just life insurance. How far do you want me to go? Because I can just keep rattling off all of the data. I mean, there is another piece of data which is even more shocking, is that the life expectancy in the United States, right? This is census and publicly available data. It was 79 years old in 2019. Average life expectancy of an American is 79 in 2019. Now it's 76. Even a tenth or two-tenths of a change in the average life expectancy indicates a lot of deaths. Now you have 3 years that have been shaved off of the pandemic. And 2021 and 2022 were massive. And the other thing is if you consider of how do you drop the average life expectancy from 79 to 76, it's not the dying off of the elderly. They would not impact that average very much. It has to be young people and very young people. And so, I mean, this is an unprecedented change in really a barometer of the health of our country. 3 years average life expectancy, and no one's talking about it. And then you can go into the pilots and the athletes, cardiac arresting, out of work, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's a scary idea that they vaccinated, you know, a whole generation of pilots. And with the incidence of heart disease, I mean, it's really worrisome, you know, if they have an accident in the air. And so I think the bigger story, it's not about the data. You can pull data from anywhere. I mean, even the UK in their publicly available health data, you can see all-cause mortality in the vaccinated is far higher than the unvaccinated. And so it's really about how this is not being talked about. And I just don't know when this censorship is going to change. I don't know what's going to make it. If a drop in life expectancy of 3 years is not a story, our media has failed.
Well, I don't mean to find macabre humor in this, but there was a parody website that ran a headline that read like this: heart problems linked to everything except that thing we made you get.
Yep.
Which it almost seems like a real headline. I want to pause for a minute and ask you something that somebody, I have a newsletter. I know you have a Substack and I have a newsletter of my own that I send out very regularly. And for the past couple of days, somebody on that list whom I know personally and I respect very much has said, the thing I can't get over here though, is he said, I don't rule out the possibility that the so-called experts can be wrong. I don't rule that out, but I am decidedly a non-expert. And so how am I to adjudicate in a case like this when I haven't studied any of the relevant subjects,
yep.
I have no credentials, and most of the people who have are telling me the opposite of what you're telling me. So why should I believe you over them? I know we've all been over this credentialism over and over and over, but I wonder if you have a kind of a glib response to that.
I do. So here's my advice to that person. I totally appreciate that situation because I have to tell you, as a self-described expert, and when I say expert, I mean, I have really closely studied many of the topics and many of the policies, the implications of the healthcare policies. So I would consider myself knowledgeable. I don't know what makes an expert, but here's the issue, is this is how I look at the world and who to listen to. This is my general advice. I came up with this strategy myself. As I say, if you want to know where the truth is, you really need to look at who's speaking that supposed truth. At this point in the pandemic, given the just colossal and historic amounts of fraud and the evidence of capture of the regulatory agencies and the silencing of academia, you know, no doctor can speak out against some of these policies. If they have concerns about the vaccines, they will lose their job, right? Now you have California passing legislation that's going to punish and literally take the license away from a doctor who publicly disagrees with supposed scientific consensus. Okay. So in that environment, I think you can only listen to those without a conflict of interest. And what does that conflict of interest look like? If you're employed by a media organization, if you're employed by a healthcare agency or a hospital or a university, those are conflicts of interest because just by the way society is now structured, they cannot speak freely. So whatever they're going to say is going to be highly palatable to the narrative and to the policies. And so for someone to really speak freely, you need to listen to someone who has no conflicts of interest, who is expert in the topic area, or at least appears knowledgeable, so much so that they have to be, this is the third core tier, they have to be able to debate and they have to be able to share and cite data. And so if you think of that construct, so this person who wrote that, they should think about what the agencies are doing. So the problem is the agencies are willing to share data. The problem is it's actually corrupt data. And I have a number of reasons to show why that is. And it's also on record by the New York Times and other newspapers that the CDC admits that they haven't been sharing data and they've been withholding data. And so I feel really bad for the average citizen because you really do hear two very different conclusions, particularly on the vaccines. On one side, everything's rosy, it's safe and effective, you can give it to pregnant people, and yes, we think it's smart to give it to toddlers. And then on the other side, we are calling a humanitarian catastrophe of massive deaths directly related to the vaccine, and I have a lot of data to back that up. And so let's say you look for a neutral party. So I've been given the example of Denmark, right? So here in the United States, we are gleefully vaccinating toddlers. Thank God, very few parents are bringing their toddlers for a vaccine. I think the last check was less than 5%. But look at Denmark. They do not recommend vaccination for anyone under 50 of low risk. And they long ago banned Moderna for anyone over 30. And in this country, we don't care. Any of the vaccines are good for everybody. And so I would say that's like a neutral third party of an entire country who's not, they're the leader in the world in pulling back from this vaccine campaign. They still offer the vaccines, but they are not pushing. And in fact, they've outlawed some of them for certain segments of their society. And so they have to understand that this is a war of information. And I would say the other side, because I feel like I'm on another side, they have these massive powers of censorship. And really what's worse is propaganda. And Thomas, I don't know if you've been reading my Substack lately, but this past week, you know, I wrote two posts on what I think is the ultimate source of all of the propaganda and censorship. And I think it begins at the medical journal level. And I have a lot of evidence to show, particularly on the topic of ivermectin, but it's you can apply it to the vaccines. In fact, vaccines are the converse of ivermectin. So these journals have suppressed the evidence of efficacy of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And at the same time, they've suppressed the evidence of toxicity of the vaccines. And I think if it wasn't for the collusion of the medical journals, rejecting positive studies of ivermectin, retracting published studies of ivermectin, so that the only thing that appears in the high-impact journals are trials where ivermectin is tested and no statistically significant benefit is shown, even though there is benefits. And so then the headlines race around the world that ivermectin doesn't work, yet we know there's 92 controlled trials with 125,000 patients in them, and it shows repeatedly reduced death, hospitalization, time to clinical recovery, time to viral clearance. Yet, if you just look at those high-impact journals, you would never know that. And so I'm calling that the fraud begins at the medical journal level, because if you don't have that curated science, that really manipulated science that shows up in the journals, you can't launch these narratives. You can't launch a narrative that ivermectin doesn't work, because if they were really free and openly publishing submissions of good quality that show benefits to any medicine, not just pharmaceutical products, you would have a much more balanced view of what's therapeutic here, but they don't do that. There are frightening papers, all on preprint servers, showing the massive toxicity of these vaccines. And you can just see it in VAERS, right? So the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, you don't even need a newspaper for that. But I will also recommend, like your friend or the person wrote this, is that ask themselves why our health agencies, our government is not talking about the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. They dismiss it. It was built to look for toxicity signals, and they started skyrocketing within weeks of the rollout, and they're at unprecedented levels. And we know the only thing wrong with VAERS is it's an underreporting factor. So the fact that there's well over, I think we're over almost near 2 million adverse events, 14,000 deaths reported in the US, and that underreporting factor is probably on a scale of 30 to 40. And so I think it's pretty easy to tell who's lying and who's actively suppressing really important information. And I will tell you, it's all to one goal. It was to support the vaccine campaign. And when that started, that censorship, that ignoring, that curated literature that gets published, which only shows that they're safe and effective, that was done with one end. And some people used to call it a noble lie, where they withhold information for you for your own good, so that it will prompt you to get vaccinated, because they're afraid if they show all the data, it would increase vaccine hesitancy. And vaccine hesitancy was known as probably one of the main barriers to the planned pandemic response in the simulation exercises that were done in the years leading up to the pandemic. You can look at the records, you can look at the documents. Vaccine hesitancy appears multiple times. They always had a plan in a viral pandemic to create a vaccine and vaccinate the world. And their number one enemy was vaccine hesitancy. And so in my experience from where I sit, the two main things that would absolutely crush vaccine hesitancy is information about the efficacy of generic repurposed drugs. Because if you know there's a safe, available alternative, you will turn to that rather than an experimental vaccine. And then the other thing that has been censored is any mentions of the toxicity. And now it's farcical, you know, like that spoof headline. I think that is somewhat funny, but what I find terrifying is the real headlines, where they literally try to explain these incredible amounts of sudden cardiac arrest, athletes on the field, the pilot issues, and all of the data screaming about all-cause mortality. And then you see headlines about climate change being the cause of it. Breathing. I've seen just ridiculous ones that you would think are spoofs,
yeah,
but they're real.
Yeah, or you're sleeping on the wrong side.
Yes.
You know, I mean, which, yes, you know, maybe it isn't so good to sleep on your left side, but I mean, really, it's not like all of a sudden all the world started doing that at once.
Well, you know, what's a really interesting connection is that you do see articles about this condition called SADS, right? Sudden adult death syndrome.
Yeah.
And I actually happen to be somewhat of an expert at cardiac arrest because as an ICU doctor, for years, I trained teams on how to respond to cardiac arrest. And, you know, I've given lectures about the history of CPR, you know, the instances of sudden cardiac arrest in the community, and they're nowhere near the numbers now. And so a really disturbing analogy is with this vaccine campaign, suddenly we're seeing unprecedented numbers of people dropping dead, athletes, broadcasts. It's all, many of them are on television. Totally healthy people. They're at a podium, they collapse. They're at a broadcast desk, they're collapsing. They're at weddings, they collapse. Even in the stands at football stadiums. I mean, I remember there was in the Premier League, which I watched last season, on one Saturday where they're all playing, there were four cardiac arrests, two on the field and two in the stands. And some of the coaches actually spoke out in their decades. They have never, ever seen two cardiac arrests in a Premier League game on the same day, and then two others in the field. So numbers of games were stopped because people were arresting. And that's not a story. And so the thing about the SADS thing is there have been people for years. You remember SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome? Well, that kind of started in the 80s, and it tracks very well with the explosion in vaccines.
Oh my.
So if you look at this weird syndrome called SIDS, which was happening to so many babies, and the system and the public literature officially does not have a cause, I would argue vaccines look like they were the cause of SIDS, and we definitely know that the vaccines are the cause of SADS.
All right, I got to ask you, I think, the question that so many people want answered, and you hinted at it when you said it must be difficult being a layman when on the one hand, you've got propaganda 24 hours a day, these things are safe and effective, and you have the exact opposite coming at you from people who seem just as qualified and who seem extremely passionate saying something really, really terrible is happening because of these very things they just told you were safe and effective. And so what I want to know is somebody like Scott Atlas, I feel like Scott Atlas is a good guy. I had him on my show. I think he did a lot of good things and he stood up to a lot of idiots and he took a huge amount of abuse. But he came on this show and said that the data show that the vaccines do have an effect on lowering severe illness and death. He said, that's what the data show. And I've heard this over and over. They say, the data show.
Wrong.
Help me understand this.
He is wrong. Okay. So he needs to share that data on which he's basing that opinion. Because I will tell you this. If you look at the granular public health data from any country that is transparently sharing them, and UK comes to mind, Israel comes to mind, for a long time, per 100,000, more patients are in the hospital who are vaccinated than unvaccinated. So that's one data source which can very quickly refute what he said.
It's just that we heard for so long the unvaccinated are killing themselves in the hospitals.
Let me finish, because here's something that I can guarantee you he doesn't know, and only few people do, and I am one of them. Why am I one of them? I'm an intensive care unit doctor. And throughout most of the pandemic, I was working in ICUs, particularly in 2021. I was working in ICU up until November. And what I noticed, and I found very curious, was that nobody in the ICU was vaccinated. And you'd open up their chart, you'd look at their medical record, and right there under the demographics, there's usually a name, the location, their age, you saw their vaccination status. And there were two categories. One was vaccinated, and the other one was unknown. Mm. Everybody was unknown. So I'm sitting there, and I have these two realities. I'm seeing the data from other countries where the vaccinated are filling the hospitals and the ICUs. And I'm looking at the U.S., and nobody in the ICU was vaccinated. And I discovered what it was. So for the first time that anyone could recollect, the way they documented vaccinated status on the admission to the hospital was completely unprecedented. So in the past, if you brought in a vaccine card, right, for your childhood vaccinations, or you just got a vaccine, you had a card, it was immediately entered into your record, and there would be a record there, and you would show up as that. Anyone could look up your record, and they would see the vaccine. During COVID, in most of the major health systems, and I validated this with colleagues and people I've talked to from other large health systems, what happened with COVID is when a patient arrived at the hospital, they did take a history and they did ask if you were vaccinated. However, if you were vaccinated anywhere but in a system physician's clinic, guess where that information went? It went into the nursing admission note, and that's where it stayed. It did not show up. It did not trigger a vaccination status. And that is demonstrably known. I've talked to a number of nurses who've told me in their systems, the same thing was true. The vaccination status showed up in a nursing admission note. And then on that first screen where it tells you the status, it did not register vaccinated. The only way to be vaccinated is if you got your shots in a clinic within that health system. And I will tell you, in my entire career, 2021, taking care of patients, only one patient ever was admitted to my ICU with a fully vaccinated status. Every single other one was unknown. And I will tell you, if you actually look into their records, you dig deep into the nursing admission note, you will find that they're vaccinated. So what I would tell Scott Atlas is if he's using the US data to make that assumption, he has no idea the core of the fraud and the lie. That is corrupted data and it's used to fuel a narrative. Wouldn't you think, Thomas, if you're trying to propel a vaccine campaign, don't you think it would be in your interest to not have the vaccinated show up in hospitals so that you could falsely present the vaccines as protective against severe outcomes and death? And I'm sorry, but he's not aware of the depth of the fraud on that data.
Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. I think we've all been in a situation where things seem to be going so wrong in our lives that we get focused on the problems themselves rather than coming up with solutions to get us out of them. It can be hard to train your brain to stay in problem-solving mode when you're faced with a bunch of challenges. Instead, we become obsessive, we catastrophize, we think about the worst possible outcomes, and none of this does a single thing to make our lives better. It only makes things worse. Well, a therapist can help you become a better problem solver, making it easier to accomplish your goals. And I do not hesitate at all to tell you that I have made use of therapy, and in particular, of BetterHelp. Like everyone, I've gone through some rough times over the years, and BetterHelp matched me up with the perfect specialist who heard what I was saying and helped to guide me through. It is a great way to get rid of stress, to find emotional healing, to help with anxiety and depression. And if you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp really is a great option. It's convenient, accessible, affordable, entirely online. You just fill out a brief survey, they match you with a therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime. When you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/woods today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/woods. I'm just flabbergasted at the whole thing, and I'm somebody who has not exactly been naive, you know, in the past, about the way the world works, but I think anybody, no matter how cynical, has to be left aghast at what may in fact be happening here. There have to be some people who innocently believed what they were told within the medical establishment, and they were told that the experts say, you got to give this thing to people and it's going to save their lives and put an end to this thing. There had to be a lot of innocent people who didn't know any better, but on the other hand, innocent is a funny word because it was kind of their obligation to look into the information and not just take people's word for it, I suppose.
Yes. And I want to say I identify with you. I mean, I have to say when the pandemic started, I had no knowledge of how controlled and corrupted the high-impact journals was. I always looked to them throughout my career as an example of what the best science is, and that I always assumed that they would evaluate the merits of trials and only put the best quality in the most important trials. I didn't know that that is in a completely censored environment and it's controlled by the pharmaceutical industry. And the depth of that control has absolutely been terrifying. I did not know that 2 years ago. I will tell you where I started, Thomas. Up until the pandemic, I read the New York Times every day, believed every word, meaning I thought the New York Times was the paper of record and literally the pinnacle of journalism. And if I wanted to get like the straight dope, an accurate assessment of a situation, the New York Times would provide that to me. And just like what I now know about the journals, I had to learn that the New York Times writes narratives. And those narratives are in service of very powerful forces. I cannot read the New York Times. And how did I find that out, Thomas? I found that out because I became an expert on ivermectin. And I had to watch lies, clear lies being written in all the major newspapers that come out of mouths of broadcasters. They were fed lies, mistruths, half-truths, and distortions. And what I saw is that there's no such thing anymore as a science reporter. There's no such thing. They will present whatever science, however they want, as long as it furthers the narrative. And once I started seeing that happening in the New York Times, I was terrified. I was like, I can't believe that the population believes this narrative that is just spewing from everywhere. And then that was my first awakening, Thomas, is that they lie. And then the next lie I had to witness were the vaccines. And I just saw repeated lies, safe and effective, safe and effective. I saw newspaper articles well into 2021, which literally had this statement. There has not been one proven death as a result of the vaccine. I would literally read that in a newspaper, knowing many tens at that time, even hundreds of thousands have died as a result of the vaccine. And so, you know, it's been transformative. You know, so I just want to say, like, I started from, I'm going to call myself naive. I literally had an implicit faith and trust in institutions. Mm. I started this pandemic thinking that Fauci was a sympathetic fellow in a tough spot with a lot of critics. And very quickly, that facade was stripped away. And what I've learned about Fauci since is equally terrifying to all the other stuff. I mean, he has been the head of the biomedical industrial complex in the United States for 35 years. You do not stay in that position unless you know how to service pharma. He literally works for pharma. And so, you know, I never knew these things. And so I have lost the faith and trust in these institutions. I trust nothing now. Whatever I see in the papers, whatever narrative it is, all I know is that it's probably not what they're saying. I don't know how untrue it is because propaganda, remember, propaganda sometimes can be a blatant lie. Sometimes it can contain partial truths.
Yeah.
But the definition of propaganda, and I'm borrowing this from Professor Mark Crispin Miller from NYU.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah, he's an expert on propaganda. And I think his definition is so important. It's a story or a message that wants to get you to think or do something. And so these narratives have an intent. If they want you to get vaccinated, you're going to get tons of stories and messages of how to get vaccinated. So all of the deplorable coverage of an unvaccinated person dying in the ICU. And here's the other thing about that corrupted data I told you about, is what that did, not only is that it manipulated the data so that they could say that vaccines were preventing hospitalization, but much worse was what it did to the physicians. Mm. I was working with physicians who were so rabidly pro-vaccine, and I don't blame them. They literally were taking care of ICUs full of dying, quote-unquote, unvaccinated patients. If I believed that and thought that was the reality, I would be mad at society. I would be screaming at my kids, my friends, my colleagues to get vaccinated, and that is what they did. So that corruption of that data turned an entire health system's providers into rabid supporters of the vaccine campaign. And the most hard, Thomas, is sitting still, looking at the world, knowing these truths, and seeing that the world is full of lies. And if I sound a little unhinged or crazy, I'm sorry. I was not crazy 2 years ago. At least I didn't think so. I think I was just misled.
No, I think you sound quite hinged considering the circumstances. I think you're fairly hinged.
I hope so.
I mean, what else are we supposed to act like under these circumstances? I mean, they put us in these positions where the only way a rational person can respond is by becoming unhinged. And then they point at us and say, look at those crazy people. Well, it wouldn't have happened if you hadn't done this to us. And by the way, I think the experience you had has been replicated by people in other fields where they're going along reading the New York Times until one day they read the Times covering something they know a lot about. And they say, whoa, wait a minute. Yep. Times has this 180 degrees wrong. Yep. Now I have to wonder, what have they gotten wrong about things I don't know that much about? And so that's how I feel as a historian or as somebody who writes about economics. I feel like, it's just propaganda 24 hours a day. I don't know anything about medicine. So right. I just kind of naively read the New York Times. But it turns out we're all suddenly discovering each other. Wait a minute. You also think the New York Times is lying? I thought it was just me.
Yeah. So I love that you bring up that example, because that's how I view my journey, is that I only saw through the facade of this propaganda and this wall of this circle of narratives once I became deeply expert at the topic, and it allows you to break through the wall of narratives because you know what the truth is. You know what the data is. And so once you see that happen in one area, then I saw it happen again, like sort of what I just said. But now you bring back a memory of, I have a very close friend of mine who's lived in Nicaragua for 10 years. And I used to visit him every year. We had a lot of fun when I'd go down there. And he would tell me, you know, years ago, he said, you know, what the New York Times writes about situations in Nicaragua is so completely manufactured and false. And he would tell me that there's all these narratives around Nicaragua because he knew, he lived there. He knew exactly what it was like on the ground. And then he would read about the country and its problems in the New York Times, and he was astonished. And so it's another example. You're right. Once you get deeply expert in something, and so here's the lesson I take from that, and I'll kind of build on the point I made before, is that when I see narratives, and I think they're pretty easy to recognize, or propaganda. So again, Mark Crispin Miller suggests that anytime you see kind of the same or similar story coming at you from multiple different media around the same time, it definitely is synchronized. So when you see propaganda, it's synchronized. I used to think it was just an echo chamber, like, you know, someone hears a good story and they're like, oh, we'll cover this story. And then it's just people covering stories and not doing the journalism. But it's not true. The synchronization of it from all these different media, that's how you can tell. And so like now, when I see narratives, so I'll give a perfect example. When the Ukraine war broke out, I started seeing these narratives, right, of big bad Russia, and we need to help the Ukrainians, which I'm sure there's partial truth to that. I'm not saying that Russia is a kind or benign force, but I just interpreted whatever was being written about Ukraine as propaganda, and that for me to get at the truth, I would have to be deeply studied on the topic. I'd have to really dig deep, look into the history of Ukraine, look into the recent events over the years, and I'd have to spend a lot of time to know what the truth is. But I refuse to accept what's being written in the papers because I know it's propaganda. And you can see what it's trying to get you to do. It's trying to drive sympathy and support for the Ukrainians, which may be due to them. Again, they may be deserving of that, but it's a little manufactured. And it's clear to me that someone who's ever writing that narrative, that's what they want me to think or do. They want me to think sympathetically about Ukraine, and they want me to do or support something that would support Ukraine. And I'm not totally sure that's the right thing. I don't know enough about Ukraine. So on a topic that I can't do a deep dive because I have zero time, I am just neutral. I refuse to take an opinion on it because I'm sick of superficial opinions based on stuff that's fed to me on the media. You have to do your own research, is what I believe. I don't know what you think, Thomas.
That is exactly the way I am. I'm not putting any emoji on any of my social media accounts. I'm not jumping on any bandwagon. I'm not being manipulated. I'm not doing any of that. Enough's enough with that stuff. Now, at the same time, we have to be selective too, though, about, it's not enough to say somebody's against the narrative, so I'm going to agree with that person, because some of those people are very sloppy. I once had somebody, because I have a certain notoriety in my corner of the world, and I had somebody spreading a propaganda theory that I'm part of a Jesuit conspiracy to take over the world. Now, first of all, the Jesuits are so feckless and left-wing, the idea they'd want to take over anything is bizarre to me, but the theory went, well, he graduated from high school, from this Jesuit high school in Wisconsin in 1960. He did blah, 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 blah. Or no, that was my father, supposedly graduated from high school in Wisconsin from a Jesuit school in 1960. First of all, my father was born in 1951 in Massachusetts. Wow. He was not Catholic at all. I mean, none of this was true. And then they were trying to trace out things that showed that I was part of a Jesuit thing. I've never had any connection with the Jesuits whatsoever. Of all the things you could think about me, I have done some things you could criticize. You don't have to make stuff up. So it makes me hesitate to go with some guy who's got an edgy newsletter because I know how careless these people can be because I was a victim of it.
And that's the thing. So that's my approach. I'm not going to listen to one side. I definitely want to see what both sides are citing as data. And you want to see it not from one side or the other. You really want to see it from 360 degrees. You want to get more objective, dispassionate people who are commenting on it. You need to look at a totality of evidence and sources. But who has the time on all these important topics?
Right. So we need somebody who curates it for us. Somebody who's trustworthy and curates it. So where do you go to get your... What would be some sources you recommend to get information from?
I don't necessarily...
How about your Substack? How do people get that?
So first thing, go to my... So it's pierrecory.substack.com. I would say my sources are people who built a credibility or a reputation for being accurate in COVID. Most of what I'm following right now is COVID. It's like my life 24/7, even though apparently COVID ended when the Ukraine war started, but joke. But, you know, so it's really a network of colleagues, epidemiologists, independent researchers who've done deep dives. You can see their data and they present it in such a way that it's verifiable. You know, they linked underlying references. And so in that little corner of... You know, society, like I know who I want to listen to. It's like Mark Crispin Miller is great. There's one Substack, which I think is phenomenal. It's called A Midwestern Doctor. I really enjoy reading him. Meryl Nass is great. Josh Gutskow is excellent. He also has a Substack. And there's a number of others. Coquin Duchien is really good. So I've looked at the work of people. And by the way, Substack is the refuge for this entire fraud and catastrophe. It's the
thank God for it. So important.
Only place. I don't know what this pandemic, I got to tell you, if it wasn't for Substack, I don't want to say we'd all be dead, but I would say that for me, my life would be very different if I didn't have Substack to read, because I've really found accurate deep dives. You know, people without real biases, they would start with a question and doing what I would call real science, right? You have a hypothesis, you test that hypothesis by looking at the data and you come to a conclusion and you could see, I mean, a lot of these writers, I mean, you can't do this in a newspaper, right? Some of the Substack posts are long and lengthy with tons of data and you really need to sift through.
Yeah.
But as long as they can be transparent with what they're saying, you know, I trust them. So I'm going back to my other thing is, who do I listen to? People without conflicts of interest, who have some credibility that they've built up. And even if not, as long as they present me the data in a transparent way so that I can look at underlying references and see how they interpreted or put together that data, then I'm comfortable in trusting them. Now, can I make a mistake there, Thomas? Sure, someone could fool me. I mean, reading an article, I'm sure people can curate and present an argument, a data-driven argument that leads to a false conclusion. But, you know, when I see one person who can do that with data, and then I see another person doing the same thing with different data, then I become much more trustworthy. But it's complicated.
Yeah. I'm going to link to your Substack because people are, after hearing you, are certainly going to want to read it. I'll link to it on our show notes page. This is episode, believe it or not, 2209. So tomwoods.com/2209 is where you'll find that link. It is Corey, K-O-R-Y. So it's pierrecory.substack.com.
Yeah, Corey, K-O-R-Y. Substack.com. Yes, thanks.
Yeah. So it's, pierrecory.substack.com will take you to that newsletter. You can read it. You can support him. Any parting words? Any other links? Anything you want to tell people about following you or anything else?
Yeah, so I always have to mention my nonprofit, right? So that's the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, which is FLCCC.net. We're an organization that solely sought to develop the most effective treatment protocols really for all phases of COVID-19. We have prevention, early treatment, hospital. And right now, myself and my colleagues, we are totally devoted to figuring out how to treat the vaccine injured and the long haulers. That is a massive catastrophe as well. There are so many that are sick, either from COVID or the vaccines, because the spike protein, unfortunately, is a pathogen. And so I just wanted to call attention to the work that we're doing, because, Tom, I don't know if you heard about this, but vaccine injury doesn't really exist. So we're actually trying to figure out a disease that doesn't really exist in society. I mean, it's the saddest thing ever. The vaccine stuff is just is tragic. So anyway, I would, you know, I'd like to invite anyone to our organization if they want to learn more about our protocols and how we approach these terrible diseases. And then lastly, I'm writing a book and I'm almost done. It's called The War on Ivermectin. You can find it on Amazon. And it's really me detailing what I became expert at in COVID, which I first became expert on ivermectin, then on the vaccines. But what I really became expert on is something called disinformation campaigns and, yeah, and how industries employ disinformation campaigns when science emerges that is inconvenient to their interests. And I watched the global disinformation campaign against ivermectin, and I detail it in the book. And so it's about my journey through COVID and everything that I learned and saw and documented. By the way, I was documented, Thomas. I documented everything I was seeing, everything that was happening at the journals, in the media, all the lies. And I hope that book is going to be a lesson to people on how to recognize disinformation and protect themselves, because there's a lot of disinformation in medicine. It's a big business. They want you to buy pills, get interventions, and they use disinformation to manipulate people into doing that. And I'm sick of it.
Well, I hope when the book comes out, you'll join us once again for another conversation. We can push that book for you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for your time today. It was absolutely tremendous.
Awesome. Thanks for talking. Take care now.
All right, everybody. Tomorrow, it's an economic topic. We're going to talk about navigating this economy and what you should do, various things you can do to stand out in an economy like this. It's going to be the kind of episode that if it doesn't apply to you, it will apply to somebody you know. Absolute guarantee. Especially your kids. Your kids should know the kinds of stuff we're going to talk about, unless you want them to have the same results that all these kids who can't pay their loans back are having. I highly recommend listening to episode 2210. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.